Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Wednesday afternoon. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State basketball tonight. Nittany Lions back in the Jordan Center tonight to take on Rutgers. It'll be a 7 o'clock tip-off tonight. We're on beginning at 6:30. Later in the show, we'll hear from Nate Bauer about tonight's game as Penn State takes on Rutgers. Rutgers is in the thick of the NCAA mix. Obviously, Penn State is. Last night, the surprise of the night was Duke losing in overtime at Wake Forest. Also, the big part of the surprise was Wake Forest taking 46 free throws. It usually happens to Duke in a month. Just kidding. But Duke's now lost to NC State and to Wake Forest in the past couple of weeks. Just the way college basketball is this year. The best team in the country appears to be Kansas. The number one overall seed does get their choice on region. So if you are the number one overall seed, you're the one that gets to pick where you want to go. So it's going to be a difficult pick that if Kansas is to be the number one overall seed, what do they want? Do they want Houston or do they want Indianapolis? And that's where they'll have to make that choice. Distance-wise, yeah, there's a couple hundred miles distance. At the same time, if they were to, for example, select Houston, if they're the number one overall seed, it would then knock Baylor to another region, which would knock their fans to another region. So there's some strategy involved here as to how Kansas, if they were to be the number one overall seed, as to how they would want to handle it. Everybody else then gets slotted after that, and you go where you go. But the number one overall seed does get to choose which region that they are in. They don't get to choose their opponent, but they do get to choose that if they get to the round of 16, they'll be in a spot that they chose. That's the benefit of being the number one overall seed in the tournament. Baseball, the Astros yesterday were booed, lostly by the crowds. Jose Altuve got brushed back. I'm going to talk to Dave Shinen here in just a few moments about the Astros and about Dusty Baker. And the reason we're going to have Dave Shinen on from the Washington Post is Dusty Baker managed in Washington for several years, has a great reputation. A lot of people have a lot of respect for Dusty Baker. And so we're going to get into that with Dave in just a few moments. The Philly split squad, 1-1, one loss yesterday. One of them beat the Pirates. We don't know if that counts. Just kidding. And that's the story of spring training baseball. Eventually, the Red Sox story will come out as to whether they're involved or the depth of their involvement in any kind of cheating. And the story will come up all over again. It's the way it is in baseball right now. It is right now, if you're Rob Manfred, obviously, it's how do you handle a crisis? Some parts he's been okay, some parts he hasn't. And again, I keep going back to the minor league baseball deal. I'm sorry, but you have a chance for a win here where you control it. And so far, he doesn't seem to get the memo on that. So far, we'll see. All right, let's talk to Dave Shinen now, Washington Post. Dusty Baker's now the manager of the Houston Astros for years. Dusty managed with the Washington Nationals. Dave, welcome. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on the show today.
Hey, I'm real good. Thank you.
All right. Obviously, you'd have a read on Dusty Baker with the time with the Washington Nationals. How do you think he's put into an interesting spot? So what do you think about the spot he's put in? What kind of personality does he have to handle that spot with Houston?
Well, you know, I think in many ways he is the perfect person for that spot. If you can imagine the Astros, you know, in November when the athletic report came out about the sign stealing scandal, in January when they fired their manager and their GM and the whole organization was in tatters. What they needed more than anything else at that moment, I would say, is credibility, likability, and a sort of, you know, moral center that the organization was lacking. And I think those are the assets that Dusty Baker brings you. Probably, I mean, off the top of my head, better than anyone else they could have possibly wound up with as manager. So, I mean, I think that, you know, he's a proven winner as well. 1,800-something wins, yep. 11th all-time. You know, the only thing lacking on his resume between him and a Hall of Fame berth is winning the World Series. And, right. and with the Astros, you know, believe it or not, he has a chance to do that. They remain among the best teams in the game right now.
All right, so now let's get to something else I find interesting, though, is that, you know, look, the manager, you got to go out and you have to meet the media and the whole deal. I got it. But when this thing first gets going, when they're at training camp, they throw him out there. He has nothing to do with this. He has nothing to do with it. How did you think he ended up handling, considering that he was watching from home like everybody else?
Yeah, you know, I agree that was a little bit, you know, disconcerting in a way. I mean, you know, they hold this press conference, and the only people to speak at this press conference to apologize was Jim Crane, the owner, who oversaw, you know, the entire organization, and two players, Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman, and Dusty Baker, who, as you said, was sitting at home while all this was going on and had absolutely nothing to do with the sign-stealing scandal. But I do think that is a testament to what Dusty brings. It just for them to put him as their face forward of the organization, I mean, at a time when they were at their low point, I think that tells you everything about how they feel about Dusty Baker and his ability to sort of transcend this.
Yeah, and what about, let's talk about his personality for a moment. What makes his personality the right personality to handle 162 games, regardless of whether it's Washington, Houston, or someplace else?
Yeah, you know, he's just somebody who gets it, you know, who just, I mean, you know, look, a manager in baseball today is primarily a caretaker of egos and a face of the franchise in front of the media, in front of the cameras. You know, the role of strategy, even where there is some variance between teams and it's very slight, most of that stuff is taken over by the front office these days. I don't want to say managers are just puppets, you know, but they have a very specific job, which is to manage men, you know, and Dusty just has this way about him. I could tell you this. I can't think of another person in the game of baseball, with the possible exception of Mariano Rivera, I guess, who is more universally beloved. I mean, there is nobody who will say a bad thing about Dusty, except, you know, of course, you know, there's a Cubs fan who's going to tell you they're still bitter about Kerry Wood, and there's a Giants fan who's going to tell you they're still bitter about the 2002 World Series. But look, in the way he handles himself and handles people, there's nobody in the game of baseball who doesn't like Dusty Baker.
Yeah. It's usually when a team goes to camp after, or spring training after winning the World Series, boy, there's a lot of attention on them. In some ways, is the Astros situation taking some pressure, at least that feel off the Nationals? Like, they're the defending world champions. Is it kind of like taking a little bit off their plate?
Yeah, I mean, that's the positive way to look at it. The flip side is, you know, it has taken away some of the post-championship glow that a team like the Nationals ought to have. I mean, it's really remarkable and coincidental, I suppose, ironic, that the Astros and Nationals share a spring training complex in West Palm Beach.
Yeah.
And I was there when camp opened, and you know, you drive down the driveway and you go left for the Astros, you go right for the Nationals. And on the day one of spring training, you know, the Astros camp was completely packed with media members, satellite trucks and everything. And over at the Nationals, there was maybe three reporters, you know, and the Nationals remarked on that. And they kind of got a little upset about it, and a chip on their shoulder, which, again, is not a bad thing for a team to have. So it is very curious. but I think it's going to be a way of life. The Astros thing is going to get a lot of attention. It's not going away. They're going to be dealing with this all year long.
What's your take on the Nationals? What kind of team are they this year?
Well, the Nationals are, I mean, they're a solid team. I wouldn't consider them the class of the National League this year. I would say that the Los Angeles Dodgers are clearly the best team in the league. The Nationals are going to be dangerous. They lost Anthony Rendon, probably their best all-around player off their World Series champs. But, you know, they're going to go as far as starting pitching takes them, and they still have Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin, Aníbal Sánchez atop their rotation. You know, they're going to be solid. Now, the big question mark for them is keeping those guys healthy. When you pitch all the way almost to November, you know, winning the World Series, coming back the next year is always a problem. You can ask the 2019 Red Sox about that. They came back after a World Series title in 2018. Chris Sale, David Price, Nathan Eovaldi all got hurt in 2019, and they finished in third place and missed the playoffs. That is what the Nationals have to avoid, and that's probably mission number one this spring, is guiding those guys back into the season healthy.
What do you think? I know baseball is an $11.7 billion industry. What has this made a dent in that moving forward? Because it already is a fan base that skews older to begin with. Is there a concern about baseball in the next 10 years, in part because this makes people go, huh, yeah, see what they do?
Well, you know, I don't get that sense. I mean, I get the sense that the cheating and the sign stealing across the game is a problem just for the on-field product and for the integrity of the game. Yeah. But I don't know that it's making people tune away from baseball. If anything, I mean, this story dominated a news cycle in January and early February that normally would have been given over to, you know, the NFL playoffs, the NHL and NBA seasons getting into high gear. Baseball was in the news, and it may not have been great publicity, but didn't they always say that, you know, any publicity is good publicity, right? So I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens at the turnstile counts this year, the TV ratings. Baseball has already been in an attendance decline, but partly that's almost by design as stadiums have gotten smaller and ticket prices have gone up. They've become more of a boutique sport, like, in that way. So I don't even know that attendance figures are going to show the whole story, but revenue certainly will, and we'll be watching that in 2020.
Right. Because when I'm done with Penn State football and Penn State basketball, I'm fortunate I have a great time announcing the State College Spikes games in the summer. And and I enjoy it. I love it. I do like 45, 50 games a summer. It's just an enjoyable thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. But I went out and I went out and bought plastic trash cans. I didn't want anybody to think that.
Yeah, bang away, man. It's going to be following them all year long. I mean, I saw at their first Grapefruit League game in Florida the other day, you know, fans had signs to taunt the Astros a little bit, and they were getting confiscated, you know. But this is going to be an ongoing thing. They're going to get nasty receptions on the road everywhere they go.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're going to have to be prepared for that.
Thanks so much, Dave. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Dave Shinen, Washington Post. Great to have him on. Gives a little perspective on what Dusty Baker's going through and the kind of personality he brings to the table that's going to help the Astros negotiate what's going to be a very tough season for them. Now, of course, they can make it the kind of season that's special because they can go out and win and say, look, we didn't hit any trash cans. We're still one of the better teams in baseball, but we'll find out. Question is going to be to me, and I'd love to, we're going to open up the phone lines in the next couple days, in the next week about this. Is baseball, does it have the same meaning to you as it once did? Now, obviously, football's a big deal. You know, obviously, in this state, wrestling's a big deal. College basketball, to some people, happens to be a big deal. But has baseball continued to have that hold on you, that 162-game hold where, I mean, the Phillies were interesting last year because we've had, you know, some reporters on that have covered the Phillies. You know, Matt Leon's one of them. And I think he summed it up perfectly. I think a year ago in spring training, the Phillies had a lot of buzz about them because they went out and they signed Bryce Harper, got Gene Segura, acquired JT Realmuto. I mean, I thought they made one smart acquisition after another. Then when the season started and you watched it play out, nothing was enjoyable about it. It was no surge, no streak. It was win one here, lose one there, win a couple here, lose a couple there. And it just felt like even the wins weren't enjoyable. It just felt like it was entire summer of grinding it out. There was never any momentum in the Philly season last year. That may change this year. Different season, different circumstance. It felt like, for example, that the Braves had an enjoyable summer. Yeah, they won the division. I understand that. But you felt like the process of the Braves playing was enjoyable. There was nothing that seemed enjoyable about the Phillies, even though they were a little bit better last year. And I don't know if it was expectations, whatever it may be. But it just, some people said it was like, you just went to the ballpark, like, all right, it was kind of a grind. As opposed to going to Pittsburgh and, okay, so it's one of the food selections here. Great. Or Baltimore. Is Boog's Barbecue open? Yeah. Game's going on. Yeah, is Boog's Barbecue open? Yeah, great. Well, we'll see how enjoyable it is across the board. Look, it's all set up for the Yankees and the Dodgers this year. It's all set up for them. Duke lost last night, beaten by Wake Forest in overtime at Joel Coliseum in Winston-Salem. It's just that kind of season where it seems like there's some teams are getting a little bit of momentum. I told you last week I thought Gonzaga would have a tough game at BYU. They did. BYU won. I did not expect San Diego State to lose in the regular season. Did not. Didn't know if they'd get out of the first weekend of the NCAAs, but I did not expect them to lose in the regular season. But they did. They lost to a 500 UNLV team. Kansas looked great. Look, Baylor bounced back last night, beat Kansas State. Penn State's got Rutgers tonight. That Michigan State-Iowa game last night was a terrific game last night. I thought that was just really great theater last night. Michigan State finally won the game. All right, coming up in the next half hour. Yesterday was Kobe. Earlier this week, they had Kobe Bryant's memorial service. We'll talk with Willie Chandler on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State basketball tonight. The Nittany Lions will take on Rutgers in the Jordan Center. Big game for both teams at 7 o'clock. We're on beginning at 6:30. The NFLPA player reps voted to send the CBA to the full membership. Now, of course, the executive board voted 6-5 against it. Then all 32 reps got together. Yesterday in Indianapolis, they had a face-to-face meeting with some of the owners who were involved in the negotiation because they had some questions. Of course, the primary question does deal with the 17th game. Because of the 17th game, the NFL owners have gone out of their way to put more incentives in there because of the 17th game, because they know it's the sticking point. Let's face it. I mean, football's a brutal game. It's tough playing 16, let alone 17. So the player reps then went back to Carmel, Indiana, just a bit north of Indianapolis, and sat down last night, and it was not a two-thirds vote, but they did get a majority of votes to send it to the full league membership. So the players now will get a chance to vote on this. But again, they did get the majority of representatives to say yes. They did not get two-thirds. 17th game is the sticking point in this. There are other parts of this that are not. And the NFL owners, part of this was explaining, why do they want to get this now? Why the push now? And it's simple. It's easy as to why it's now. They want to be able to go to the TV networks, which is next on the negotiating table, and say, here is a 17-game schedule. No earlier, by the way, than 2021. 2020 will be a 16-game schedule. 2020 will include the expanded playoffs with two extra teams in. Okay. Earliest thing go to 17 games is 2021. They want to be able to go to the networks and say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give you more inventory. Obviously, we want more money. It also means they could go to Amazon, they could go to Facebook, they could go to anybody they want with the 17th game if they wish, if they think there's more money there. They can do that too. But that's why they want to get this part done. That way they can go to the TV networks and say, this is the inventory we have. Also, they want to be able to go to the TV networks and say, we have 10 years of labor peace, because this is a 10-year deal, by the way. They want to be able to tell the TV networks, we're going to have stability for 10 years, no lockouts, no strikes. So there are a lot of elements that come into this so that when you go to negotiate with their media partners, they've got, quote, their labor ducks in a row and their scheduled ducks in a row. All right, earlier this week, an emotional service, memorial service for Kobe Bryant and Gianna Bryant that took place at Staples Center. Kobe and Gianna were laid to rest back on February 7th, but yesterday was, 2 days ago, Monday, they were able to have the memorial service at Staples. Right after Kobe passed away, Matt Cotrillo did a great job of finding Willie Chandler, the head basketball coach at College Misericordia, who played against Kobe in the state playoffs when Kobe is at Lower Merion. And so let's revisit that and welcome him back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. You played against Kobe Bryant in high school in the playoffs, state playoffs. He obviously would come into the game with a great rep to begin with. What was it like facing him one-on-one, and did the hype match what you thought you would see?
Yeah, well, at the time, I was 15 years old, so I was only a sophomore. He was a senior, but, at the everyone followed basketball. You know, we knew who he was. We knew he was the number one player in the country, and I've never played against anyone, you know, that caliber yet in my life, you know, and still to this day I haven't. But, you know, we got to the point where, you know, we upset Williamsport in the first round of states, and we knew we were going to play Kobe in Lower Merion. You know, and they're the number one team in the state. I think they had one or two losses. And that week, he was in the Slam magazine, had a big write-up in the Slam magazine. And that's when I, like, really learned about who he was, who his dad was. You know, he spoke five languages or six languages, and I'm like, all right, this kid's pretty impressive. You know, still didn't know how good of a basketball player he was, because we really didn't scout him, because we didn't think we were going to beat Williamsport. So we didn't scout Lower Merion, really. It's just Coach Lyons came to me and said, Chandler, you're guarding him. You're our most athletic guy. You got him. And I said, thank you. And I kind of smiled, because I didn't know what I was getting myself into until later on. But it was a great opportunity.
All right, so in the end, what did you get yourself into?
Well, let me say this. Kobe on the court wasn't the nicest guy. You know, he was intense from the start. You know, he threw an elbow at me, got an offensive foul early in the game. I think he's trying to make a point there, like, hey, get off me. and hit me in my throat. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was trying to grab his shorts and stuff, trying to irritate him. He's just smacking my hand away and telling me every time he's going to score or dunk the ball. And he did it every time he said he was going to do it. And I, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, this is a whole different kind of ball player. I see why he might be going to the NBA. And, you know, but the thing that impressed me most about him was after the game. You know, he wasn't, like I said, he was intense, very, you know, he was a killer on the court. Like, he didn't smile, didn't say anything nice to me on the court. But after the game, he came down to the locker room, you know, to said to my coach, hey, where's the Chandler kid at? You know, took me out, I got my family, took all pictures, signed autographs, talked to me, gave me some advice. And that's when I was a Kobe fan from that point on. You know, that was, you know, for a guy to be able to flip the switch like he did, to being on the court, and then to being polite and intelligent like he was off the court, you know, that's how I want to play. You know, I'm like, I'm going to be that way no matter what. I'm not as good as Kobe, but when I'm on the court, and I try to teach my players now to this day, like, when you're on the court, no matter who you're playing, I don't care if it's your best friend from high school, you know, he's in front of what we're trying to do. You know, we had to take it personal like that. And then off the court, I want you to be the best gentleman around campus, in the classrooms, and be gentlemen. You know, and that's the one thing I try to teach now, and that's the one thing I was, and I try to be when I was, you know, growing up playing and, you know, going through my career.
He talked during the game. Do you remember any memorable trash talk line that even stuck with you and made you smirk a little bit?
Yeah, so the best part of the game, you know, even though we're getting killed, it's a second half. They're already, I mean, the game's in hand for them as it is. You know, Kobe goes down the lane and finger rolls a shot, but air balls it. So our student section, which was probably like 2,000, 3,000 deep, started chanting, air ball, air ball. And so we come back down. We could have been a foul in front of their bench. So I'm guarding, Kobe's taking the ball out of bounds, and I'm guarding him. So before he gets handed the ball, he says to me, hey, Chandler, watch this. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, what's he talking about? Watch this. You know, so before I can even think, he throws the ball in. I get hit with a back screen. The next thing I know, I'm turning around. The ball's at the top of the backboard, and he's grabbing it for an alley-oop dunk and goes in front of our student section and, like, kind of laughs at our student section, smiles at our student section, and that was it. You know, I was like, oh. You know, I ran back, and he's smiling at me the whole time down the court, and I couldn't do anything about it. I'm like, all right, he told me what he was going to do. I got hit with a back screen. I got out of the way quick.
That's unreal.
He did talk a lot, though. I mean, and he let you know what he was doing. And most of the time, he followed through what he was saying.
What's it been like for you knowing that you had that 2 hours where it was you against him? And not only that, but when it was over, he appreciated you, the competitor. What was it like watching his career play out because you had that experience?
And I'm glad you said it. That's why I feel so connected to him. Like, once we played that game and he talked to me like a human being, he didn't talk to me like I was a fan. He talked to me like a person. And to see to see what he did in the NBA, I was his biggest fan. Like, when he won a championship, I felt like I won a championship. Like, that's how I was connected to him. And I think that's why the city of Scranton is connected to him, because we had that chance. Scranton kids had a chance to play against one of the best basketball players to ever play the game. And I think that's why our area is hit so hard by this and why all the news stations are doing. We had a connection. You know, no matter what anyone says, there was a connection there between Scranton and Kobe and myself guarding him and how he treated me after the game. There's a connection, and that's why I was so hurt. You know, we had practice today. I really didn't want to be there. You know, I don't want to be around basketball right now at this time. But, you know, I still got to do my job. And it's just, you know, to all the families that, you know, that were affected by that crash, it's a shame. It's a shame. And like I said, you know, January 26th will never be the same, you know, for me at least.
Right. You touched on this briefly, but there are life lessons that you can learn from the best. And if you listen to the best, you observe the best, you then have the ability to pass along those lessons to others. So what are the lessons of
that you learned from even that experience where you competed head-to-head with him? And what are the lessons you learned that you watched him as the years went by that you pass on to your players now?
Well, the biggest lesson, you know, I take from everything is his intensity on the court. Like, I think Jordan probably was the only other guy I've watched play basketball that can match Kobe's intensity on the court. And I try to play like that. You know, I didn't care if people liked me on the court. I want people to like me off the court and respect me off the court. But if you didn't like me on the court, I was doing something right. You know, and that's the one thing Kobe always said. He goes, I don't need people to respect me and like me on the court. If you don't like me on the court, that means I'm doing something right. You know, I'm affecting the game in a way where this guy's not happy. And that's the one thing I try to teach to my guys to this day now, you know, intensity all the time. You have 4 years of college to play basketball, and it goes quick. You know, and I want you to enjoy it, you know, but when you lace them up on the court and you get on that court, you know, just take no prisoners. We're going for 40 minutes, and we want the other team to dislike us by the time we're done. You know, and then we can shake hands after and be polite and talk to them after and do all that stuff. But that's the one thing I learned from Kobe that, you know, I respect him. You know, I respected so much about him. Like, some people didn't like him. You know, some people didn't like his attitude. But I understood as a basketball player myself and now as a coach where he was coming from.
What about, let's go to the other part. What about do you talk to your players at all about the ability to flip the switch between off court, on court?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. I mean, that was my big adjustment, and I didn't know that. I didn't know that in high school. You know, until I played Kobe. You know, I was always the same way, no matter what. And I was kind of a troublemaker in high school. You know, I was really, you know, up until that time I played Kobe, I got in a little trouble in high school, and didn't have my head on straight. And once that Kobe game happened, you know, my grades got better. You know, I did more in the community. I started doing more stuff like. Playing Kobe, you know, it helped me so much. It helped me so much, like, because, you know, I don't hide anything. You know, I was a knucklehead earlier on, you know, in my life. And and that game showed me, hey, I could play on the same court with a guy going to the NBA. I mean, maybe not match up with him, but I have a future in basketball. If I could score 14 and have some good moves on Kobe, I picked his pocket once, and it made me think, like, all right, I need to get my head on straight. And go from there, you know, and things can happen for me.
Willie, sports can be great therapy. Now, obviously, you didn't want to be around a basketball court today, but there'll be a point now where it will be, and you'll coach games. How important can your players be to you in this particular time, and how important can the game be to you in this particular time to allow you to move forward?
It's very important, man. Basketball's in my whole life. It's been, you know, since probably 5-6 years old, basketball has been my life. And my guys are great. I love my team. You know, we're struggling a little bit this year because we're kind of young. You know, I lost 9 seniors last year, and we're struggling. But these guys know what Kobe meant to me. You know, today at practice, you know, all of them had our number 24 jersey on the floor in the middle of the Cougar at practice. And, basically for me, you know, and I understood what they were trying to do, and they knew how much he meant to me and how much he affected my life. You know, up until this point. And we had a great practice today. You know, yes, I didn't want to be there, you know, but that's my job. And I think basketball is definitely a cure for me, you know, because that's where my life's changed, you know, and that's where Kobe changed my life, playing him back in 1996. And, you know, and that's why I got so much love for Kobe, and that's why this all hurts so bad. You know, that's why yesterday I just couldn't believe it. I didn't move yesterday. Like, I went to a few news stations to interview me. I didn't want to do that, you know, and it's kind of, you know, to the point where it's like, hey, let me share my memories, because they are great. You know, my memories are great, and a lot of people haven't got a chance to meet Kobe or even, you know, see him play or play against him. Like, he was a great man. I know he wasn't always right or, you know, the perfect guy, but when I met him, he was intelligent, polite, and I was like, I need to be like him. You know, I need to be like him on and off the court. And that's how I think that's why I had such a successful career playing, you know, going overseas and playing professional and coming back and translating it to coaching now. I think that experience in 1996 changed my whole path of what my life was going to be. And that's why I'm so, you know, I have so much admiration for Kobe Bryant. I think that's why people keep calling me for my stories, because I think they know how much he meant to me. And it's the truth. He his whole career I followed. It was game one of the NBA season. I followed it like it was game seven. You know, I enjoyed watching him play. You know, I enjoyed watching him play, and I enjoyed watching him grow up, you know, from far away, like seeing how much he changed his career when he lost his athletic ability, how much he worked on his game to get in the post and score that way. You know, and that's how great he was. Like, he never was satisfied. You know, and that's how I am now with life and coaching. Like, I'm never satisfied. You know, we're having a tough year this year, and I'm hard on my guys, but they understand where I'm coming from. You know, we came off winning two championships, and now we're having a tough year, and they understand where I'm coming from. Like, I want the best out of my guys, and I think that's only going to help them in the future. And that's just the way I live.
You could tell how rewarding it was for Kobe to come out of the stands and coach his daughter and her teammates. What is rewarding to you as a coach in your chosen profession? For you as a coach, what's the most rewarding thing?
Well, me as a coach is seeing my guys graduate. You know, and that's, you know, winning championships are great. You know, I've been coaching 5 years, and I was lucky enough to win two championships already through my first 4 years of coaching. You know, I'm in my fifth year right now. But seeing guys graduate and see them walk across the stage and then get jobs and invite me to their weddings and things like that, that means I did something right. And that's the biggest joy of my life. You know, I have a six-year-old daughter. She's going to be a six-year-old daughter now, and she hasn't played basketball yet. You know, and I know there's going to come a time where she comes to me, "Daddy, I want to play basketball." You know, and I'm looking forward to that time, but I'm not going to force it on her. And that's what, you know, and that's the joy of my life right now. My basketball team and my daughter, and that's what I look forward to every day. You know, my daughter, when things don't go right in basketball, she's there to give me a hug no matter what. And that's it. And I know Kobe had the same relationship with his kids, and, you know, he was a great father. You know, he was a great father. He was on his way, they're on their way to a basketball camp / game when it happened. And like I said, I look at my daughter, and that's all, you know, it kills me. It kills me so much, you know, that he had it. You know, I know he wasn't thinking about himself in that last minute or so when the helicopter was going down. I know he's thinking about, you know, his daughter, and that's what, sure, you know, that's what upsets me the most. Like, that's what makes me sick and sad and just, you know, there's no words.
Yeah. On the lighter side of life, just for a moment, we'll leave this on a light note. When your players invite you to their weddings, do you embarrass them by doing the electric slide?
Hey, the thing about it, I'm still kind of young and I could dance. You know, I know all the new moves now. You know, my daughter watches YouTube a lot, so I see all the new moves, and, you know, I try to stay up with them so the guys don't think I'm old. So it's, you know, I try to stay hip with whatever's changing, whatever dance is going on.
Yeah,
I'm definitely going to embarrass them. I mean, I'm going to go out there and dance. I probably could dance better than half of them anyway. So, you know, they might be embarrassed because I could dance better. That's probably the only reason they could be embarrassed.
Well, Willie, for us, it was a privilege to have you on. Thanks so much for the time, the insight, the depth. We appreciate that and you very much.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day. Have a good night. And we'll talk soon.
Willie Chandler, head basketball coach, College Misericordia, on his time with Kobe Bryant. Next half hour, Nate Bauer, Blue White Illustrated, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.